So we're going to go ahead and start because Gail is running a little late because of work today. So this is the regular meeting of the San Juan County Public Hospital District Number 1 Board of Commissioners. Today is Wednesday, February 24th, 2021. It is 5:32, and this meeting is held remotely under COVID-19 rules. The public can call in at 509-473-0276 and enter 208-361-083 pound. And so we will call this meeting to order. If Peggy could do roll call, please.
Certainly. Okay, Commissioner Clary.
Here.
Commissioner Lehman.
Here.
Commissioner Lindstrom.
Present.
Commissioner Lachine Seitz is. Commissioner Loring.
Here.
Additionally, we have Superintendent Hutchins and Interim EMS Administrator Butler. And welcome, Beth.
Thank you.
Our next item on the agenda is to approve the consent agenda. I'm happy to entertain a motion.
So moved.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Unanimous. Thank you. We have commissioner comments, but if there's nothing at this time, then we'll move on to audience participation. Let's see. I don't think anyone was able to or did submit comments ahead of time, but if there isn't anyone that has called in that has anything that they'd like to share, they can go ahead and press star six to unmute themselves and announce your intention to speak. We also have a comment at the end of the meeting if you wish to wait until then. I'm not hearing anyone at this time, so we'll move forward to our outside agency reports. Today, we're hearing the Peace Health Peace Island Medical Center subsidy report from June 1st, 2020 through December 31st, 2020. And we welcome Beth Williams-Giger at this time. I'll hand it over to you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to share my screen because, you know, I sent a narrative report, full PowerPoint on a couple of the initiatives and the summary PowerPoint of what are the updates over the last 6 months during this reporting period. Jack Estrada is our interim CAO, and he can't be here tonight, so I am presenting the report in his stead. So I'm going to share my screen. Hopefully all this will work. And are you seeing it? You're seeing the PowerPoint?
Yes.
No.
Oh,
I'm not.
You're not yet?
Yes, I am now.
Yes.
Yeah, I think there's some kind of a weird delay about how it gets on there. Okay, so I'm going to get my screens going here. So reporting period, July 1st, 2020 through December 31st, 2020. There's a nice shot of our hospital that's always on there. And we always start the report with, as the subsidy agreement recommends, is for the number of patients served. And you can see here that, you know, the July through December reporting period is shown in those numbers for each service line. You can kind of compare it to the January through June era where, you know, this was last year when COVID struck in January and a lot of the services were restricted. People avoided the hospital. They did not come. We did virtual visits. It took us several weeks and probably about 2 months to really get those going in force, but they are included in the clinic visits. You can see that some of the numbers declined and some were okay. For lab tests, particularly late in September, we finally got the lab analyzer, the PCR analyzer that allowed us to do in-house COVID testing, because you might remember that in the beginning, you know, COVID testing was taking several days to come back. And in September, we finally got in-house a machine that allowed us to get a turnaround time of about 70 minutes for in-house people with COVID, which was really nice because then we would know what we were, you know, what kind of inpatients we were looking or emergency department patients we were working with, whether they had COVID or not. So the lab tests, as you can see, have come back in force. The other service line, cancer care and specialty care, I mean, that was one, well, we had some non-essential services were restricted during that COVID, like outpatient surgeries and elective surgeries. We still continue to do chemotherapy services. Those were essential and our patients needed that. And so we were open for them. Do you have any questions? Anybody have any questions on the overall numbers of patients served?
This is Trish, and I'm just really interested to know the increase in mammography. What do you think made the difference?
Well, I know that, you know, people wanted to get their mammography done. We had our new 3D machine, and we had to curtail it for a while in the beginning. But once that became a service that we could reopen up, people just lined up and got them in. In fact, we're even including an additional Monday now for mammograms. So it's really convenient to get your 3D mammos awesome. Here. And they were always every Tuesday, every week, but now we're adding one Monday a month for overflow. So yeah, people want to make sure they get their preventative visits. The next slide was something that the public hospital district had asked for in the past, was patient origin by zip code. You know, what are the percentage of patients that are district residents? And so we go with the zip code 98250 for that. 86% of those patients are from that zip code, and it's evenly split during this reporting period of 7% of patients from the other islands in the county and 7% from outside of San Juan County. The health services, the subsidy agreement, we are to report on health services provided. And so these are the general categories, of course, primary care with the Peace Health Medical Group, 24/7 emergency department services. Our integrated behavioral health program with primary care has really taken off with our training with the University of Washington over the last 15 months. And that's going to be a permanent program, and it's going to be rolled out to all the clinics in the Peace Health Network since it's been successful here. We continue to provide our visiting specialty care, outpatient cancer care and infusion services, a big driver of our services here. We are now continuing with our outpatient surgical services like endoscopy and colonoscopy and, you know, general surgery, outpatient surgeries are back. If we get a spike in COVID, I mean, we could go back on that, but we're regaining those. We have now outpatient and inpatient physical therapy services and of course, our professional pharmacy services. The other thing that we always report on are the number and type of clinical providers at Peace Island Medical Center, and your narrative report gives you everyone, but I'm just giving you the updates on what happened during this last reporting period. We added a new primary care doctor to the primary care clinic, Dr. Jesse Nye, DO, who he and his family now live on the island, and he came to us in August. And then we got Mallory Brown back, our ARNP. She returned part-time in January after a leave of absence. A great new addition to our emergency department is Dr. Susan Brown. She joined us as a full-time provider in December, and she's a resident of San Juan Island. She's delightful. She has a new baby and a husband, and they are loving it here so far. She's on duty tonight, so hopefully none of you will have to come and meet her, but if you ever do, I think you'll be impressed. She's really sweet and a good doctor. In cancer care, Dr. Raish retired in June of last year, and everybody loved Dr. Raish, but we have got Dr. Peter Reisman, who is just a locum tenens. He's not committing to us full time forever, but he will be with us as a locum tenens until August of 2021, when they have somebody new coming. And I'm sorry, I don't know the name of that person yet, but that's the commitment that we get a new full-time person for our medical directorship in oncology in August of 2021. And then the GI consults and procedures are carried out by Dr. Woods, Dr. Steiner, and Dr. Morrison in our outpatient surgical area. Those are the names that they kind of rotate who's going to be here when, and that's on a monthly basis. We have GYN consults with Dr. Anna Scanlon, who it comes out monthly from Peace Health Medical Group. And then some of you probably know Bob Prinz from Fidalgo in Anacortes. He has provided OB-GYN services out here for way back in the old medical center days, and he finally retired this year. But his partner, Dr. Foist, continues to come out monthly and provide obstetric services and GYN consults. The other thing that we report on are the nature and results of quality initiatives at Peace Island, and your materials that were sent out, not only do we have a narrative report, but we have a PowerPoint on the quality initiatives prepared by our infection prevention and quality person for Peace Island Medical Center, Crystal Espinoza, and that's there for you to read. There's a lot of detail in that quality PowerPoint on what goes on here. She provides it to us every 6 months, but the news in the last 6 months, of course, were the quality initiatives around our COVID-19 efforts. And the update for that is, you know, every day the COVID-19 policies and procedures changed and evolved, and we know so much more now than we did in the beginning. But this little icon of No Coronavirus is a website icon that all the staff people here can get on what's called Crossroads, which is our intranet, where we receive all the information from the hospital system, and all the policies that are updated are in this. If anybody here needs to know anything about their safety or personal protective equipment or anything's new and different about visitor policies or any of those things, the latest infection prevention, this No Coronavirus thing in our intranet has been really handy. Just to remind you that our quality plan and quality committee manages all our quality initiatives for the hospital, and they're all reported up monthly to our governing board or our community health board so that they know what we're monitoring. During this COVID-19, if you've been to the hospital, you know that we screen for temperature. We've even hired a concierge at the front desk to kind of take the burden off of asking all these questions for patients that come in to screen people for their symptoms. You know, half the furniture in this place is gone now in a storage unit because we just couldn't have the kind of cozy, warm furniture that we had where everybody sat together and was comfortable. It's kind of stark around here. I mean, the first thing to go, as I recall, were the magazines, and everything since then has just been kind of laid bare so that we don't have, that we have physical distancing. Even our poor staff, a lot of times, I mean, there's no place to even eat lunch together. So we've worked on those things, and every time there's been a new policy out, that's where it's been found for our staff. We had no hospital-acquired COVID infections here. So nobody came here to this hospital and got infected with COVID. We've also, one of the initiatives, of course, the vaccine clinics, and I'm sure you guys all know that it's frustrating. Our hospital has vaccinated since we've gotten the vaccine in late December and January. We vaccinated 148 of all our 1A category caregivers, a couple of EMS people, some volunteers, some hospice volunteers. So that's all in that 1A category. So 148 of those people have gotten both of their doses and vaccinated. So everybody here has their double dose now and are safer than they were before. And we've only received 100 vaccines for our actual patients. And of course, we started with the 85 and up numbers. And so we have vaccinated 100 of those patients now, 85 and above. And as soon as the vaccine shakes loose, we're going to be having a lot more of the clinics for our patients and running those mostly on Tuesdays, and where I think we're going to curtail some of the other services that we have going on Tuesday, maybe just have virtual visits for our clinics so that we can get through so many more, because there's a lot to go. And you probably know that the clinics, or the other clinic, the pharmacy and the health department are all in the same boat with us on that, on the vaccination situation. We'll have a lot more information on vaccinations at our next reporting period. But just to remind you, the quality measures of performance that we monitor here and report up to the board and all these things, these are our key quality indicators, and I won't read them, but they're things like, you know, patient safety events, falls, hospital acquired injuries or illnesses, the diabetic metrics, the other things. There was a sepsis initiative that we're going to be starting that kind of got put on hold during COVID, but that's another thing we're going to be monitoring. And then the biovigil hand hygiene, I'm kind of in charge of this. It's kind of a new thing. It's unique. It's basically going to be a badge. Right now, hand washing is monitored in person by observation. People are observing how many times the nurses wash their hands before they go in and out of rooms, and all that data is required performance measures, and it's basically collected by hand and put into spreadsheets and reported out. This new system is going to be a badge that basically shows when your hands need to be washed. It's almost got like a breathalyzer function, where you put if you do your hands with the alcohol gel, you can put your hand up to the thing and it'll turn green because it detects the alcohol gel. Or the system is going to be this, basically, as you see, there's going to be a sensor over every bedded room. So all the inpatient rooms and the emergency rooms where a patient might be in a bed, there's going to be a sensor above the door that will work with the badge and tell patients, you know, patients can look and see a green hand. The staff will know. And obviously it's to reduce healthcare acquired infections. And of course, during this COVID time where everybody's monitoring hand washing, it'll just be so much more convenient. These little badges go in those docking stations and download all their information. So we'll get some really good data, and nobody has to do it by hand anymore. So that's going to roll out here in the next couple of months, and it's kind of unique. Any questions about quality? Yeah.
Hi, it's Trish again. I just had a question about this biovisual system, which I think is awesome. Will this be in the clinic as well, or just?
No, it won't be in the clinic. It's not going to be in the clinic, but it will be in the hospital inpatient unit and the ED. Now, they might put it in the clinic at some point, but it's a lot of, they're going to come and do a site visit next week where they're by the people that put in these sensors are going to see where we need them and go from there. It's kind of cool.
I think it's great. Oh, it's very cool.
Yeah. 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 And I think, well, if nothing else, I mean, everyone knows now about washing their hands, but I mean, this is really going to be some cool data. So stay tuned for more on that our next reporting period. And the other thing that we always report on are the patient experience indicators, and those are prepared by Jenny Westbury, who is our patient experience person. I sent you the PowerPoint on that too that you can look at, and I've just selected a couple of the slides. It's kind of technical, but we use the Press-Ganey patient experience. People are given surveys after they've been here to see, you know, to rate our services and all these different categories on these measures that we follow. This is for the reporting period of July through December, and it represents only 18 inpatient surveys that were sent out. You probably know that a lot of our inpatients are elderly and frail, and some may not even return their surveys, which is usually the case. And you can see that we've met all our targets here, except for one category under what's called leader rounding. And that is, I think, a misunderstood situation. We've tried a lot of ways to, you know, figure out, you know, patients say, well, I don't know if a leader came in here or not. Well, what happens is that a leader can be anyone. It can be me. It can be someone from administration. It can be the director of clinical services, Teresa Loya, or it can be our head pharmacist, Catherine Scott. And a lot of people don't know that the leader has been there talking to them, and they just don't know how to answer that, right? We've tried to think of ways that we go in and say, well, hi, you know, we're here, I'm the leader here today. But a lot of people don't put two and two together when they fill out their surveys. So we're working on that. I don't know how we're going to do that. We didn't want to really put little things on our badges, but it's nice to go in and talk with patients before they go home, if they're able to talk with us, and make sure that they have everything they need and just know that we are looking in on them. This is the inpatient experience overview, and it's some technical data here, the statistical stuff, but you know, like I said, only 18 inpatient surveys were returned, and we need at least 30 to be kind of statistically significant. But the current opportunities for improvement is the summary here from Jenny, is that, you know, the quietness of the hospital environment, describing our new medication side effects, preparing patients for symptoms to evaluate after their discharge, and how do they get help for those. We do take some time. Oh, shoot, my lights just went out. We do take some time to, of course, the pharmacist does medical reconciliation with the patients before they leave on everything. But a lot of this, once they get home, they may have questions. And I think our care coordination program with HRSA is going to be really helpful in the discharge planning of patients and being able to follow up with them on things that after they get home that need to be followed up on. So I think we'll do better with that as we go along. And then Jenny always tries to emphasize the positive here and put some comments in that people put on their surveys, their write-in comments. And she's tried to put some from inpatient, from the emergency department, and our outpatient ambulatory service. So those are there just to top us off. Any questions about the patient experience data?
No, I just have a comment, Beth. I heard from, I suppose, two of your 100 people that have been vaccinated, and they were just saying what a great experience it was and how pleased they were, and they are both over 85, so they were feeling like the experience was really positive, really professional, and they were very grateful. So thank you for that.
Oh,
and thanks
yeah.
for the data on the vaccines as well. And I know that it's a waiting game getting enough vaccines for everyone.
Oh, it is. And it was such a pleasure to serve that group. I mean, they were so sweet, and it was fun. It was like their big outing. And we also have some plans to address the homebound patients, and we're working on that right now. Is, you know, if they can't get to us, we're going to get to them sooner or later here. We're going to start that up soon because we'll have some vaccinations for them. We're going to work with Lainey and community paramedicine and send our nurse out with Lainey to get our patients that can't get in. And we'll continue that as we roll this stuff out. But it's, you know, everybody needs to be patient, but it's not easy because you know, there's no vaccine and it's frustrating. And if we schedule people ahead and then the vaccine doesn't show up, it's kind of a mess to try to reschedule. So we haven't done that, but we're working along with the health department. We have a call every Tuesday morning with the health department, with Eventide, with the pharmacy, and just on vaccinations, you know, who's on first, who's on second, who got vaccines, who didn't, and who's going to be where, when. I mean, it was pretty exciting to hear about the National Guard, but of course they were thwarted because their 1,100 vaccines didn't get out of the weather and get here in time, but they're coming back. So that's the good news. And I don't know how long it's going to take us to get everybody vaccinated, but I think if we can get a continual supply of vaccine, I think we'll make good headway. So that was the experience, patient experience indicators. And the last thing that we're required to report on is the financial viability of our operations. And so this slide is just a summary of the revenues and deductions on this slide. So you can see at the top here, the 516,838 is what we are assuming is the revenue from the subsidy. We report on two lines of business, which is emergency and family medicine, specifically on those two revenues, of the total revenues for those, and then the operating expenses that have to do with those two lines of service, and the depreciation and the margin. So you can see the loss of, you know, just on those two lines, those two service lines alone, the loss at the for the 6 months is $1,075,704. You apply the subsidy $516,838 to that, and that gives you the loss of $558,866. And then what we also do is include the other lines of business in the hospital, the other service lines, and those deductions from Medicare, Medicaid, and then bad debt and charity for all other service lines. So that would be like ancillary lab, oncology, any surgeries and that kind of thing. And then you'll see a bottom line loss with at the end of this reporting period of the $6,349,303. This is the financial report as it looks in a whole, but the same kind of thing, you know, the subsidy at the top, the total loss and gain after the subsidy, and the final loss for that is for this reporting period, the $6,349,303. And then a conclusion that's prepared by the accountants for us for this last month of the six reporting. So because of the healthcare services that are covered by the subsidy, the charitable services, the emergency department service line, the primary care physician service line, the estimated 6 month loss without the subsidy, as I mentioned, was $6,866,141. And with an estimated tax subsidy of the $516,838, the loss is reduced to the $6,349,303. And so when you add in the other lines of business with the hospital, the total PPS health services provided for that same period resulted in a positive margin of 7.38%. So in other words, $887,710. With the subsidy and a positive margin of $370,872 or 3.808% without the subsidy. So that's the good news. Are there any questions about the financials or the conclusions of those?
This is Trish, and I just had a question just to understand. The total Peace Health services provided, is that all of Peace Health, all of the Peace Health entities?
No, just Peace Island.
Just Peace Island.
Just Peace Island, right. And all the different service lines here, which include lab and x-ray, pharmacy, those are some of our, you know, better lines of business, but they're still the deductions from those or the uncompensated care piece of those are on that financial piece. Make sense?
Thank you.
Okay. Well, that is the conclusion of updated in 6 months. So I hope I haven't taken too much time. I'm happy to answer any questions that come out from that. And I guess I'll quit sharing my screen unless you want to see any of the slides again.
Beth, this is Everett. So how do you see things moving forward? Do you see things as COVID being a hiccup, or is that going to be beneficial? How do you see things moving forward from this report?
Well, I think we're going to see a definite improvement because, you know, in the beginning, when you look at those those numbers in the first part of the year, people were really afraid to come here. I mean, they wouldn't even come to the emergency department unless they were just really dire and we had to get the word out. It was okay to come here, that it was safe to be here, actually safer than someplace, safer than King's Market, I would imagine, because you know, our environmental services, our housekeeping department wipes down everything every 2 hours on all the touch surfaces. We were screening patients that were coming in. What we know we're doing now, and there's a lot of work on what we're calling our recovery phase. I mean, how do we put these services back in? A couple of silver linings. We started doing virtual visits, and now that's an option for people. We thought maybe people would stick with the virtual visits for their primary care, but no, they like to come in and be seen. And in fact, there are some appointments that just need to be in person. But people still use the virtual visits. Of course, some of our things that people have to come in for are elderly patients. They just have to come in, like Coumadin Clinic, the cardiac specialists. I mean, it beats going to the mainland for a visit when you can come here and see the visits. And now that we're doing elective surgeries again, people would rather have those things done. And you know, they literally put them off for 6 months. So now that we've moved into phase two and some of these things and people are going to get vaccinated, I think they realize it's safe to come here and get services. So I think we're going to see a recovery in the next reporting period. And, you know, like Frank James said, we'll probably still be vaccinating people all the way to November. But and of course, this summer, I think a majority of people will be vaccinated. And I just think we'll see a recovery for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, I hope that's the case, because a lot of people, some people, well, when we curtailed services, of course, we lost some staff too. You'll notice that in the narrative report, especially in lab and ancillary. Some people just were like, okay, I'm done. And so recruiting and retention of people we know is a problem, and we're going to continue to do that. We've had to staff our emergency department with a lot of traveling nurses because we just don't have the bandwidth to get permanent people, or they get here and then we lost a couple of really great ED nurses because they just wanted, the spouse couldn't do anything out here, didn't have a job and had to leave. And, you know, so COVID took its toll for sure. Well, any other questions for me, or I'll quit sharing my screen anyway here. Hopefully that'll do. Okay. Do you, you don't see it anymore, do you?
I do.
Okay. Okay. Is the screen okay, Nathan?
Beth,
or what?
It's still showing. Try the button on the top right where you initially clicked to share. There should be an X now. Yeah, there you go.
Is it gone? Okay. Got the wrong X. Okay. Thank you, everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Beth. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Beth.
Okay. And I can stay on if you want for a little while, or do you want me to stay on in case anybody calls, or do you want me to
stay on if you wish? We're happy to release you, of course. And, you know, for the public, they should know that all of these documents are on our website and
right.
If they have any further questions.
And of course, if anybody has any questions or you come up with any questions, just send them to me. I'm happy to respond.
Great. Yeah, thank you after so the fact.
Okay. You. Bye, everybody. I guess I'll
thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I see that Commissioner Lachine Seitz is here. Thank you, Gail, for
Oh, hi, Gail.
It. Yeah, I made it about 5:45, so I got to see most of
Will you guys then move to approve this report and
yes, that is our next item of business, is to make a motion to approve.
Okay, maybe I'll better stay on till that happens. Then I can report to my boss that happened. Thank you.
Okay. So we do need to hear a motion to approve our semi-annual payment to Peace Health in accordance with the Peace Health Peace Island Medical Center Subsidy Agreement for $511,294.01, covering July through December 2020.
Annalisa, we need to revise that. I looked at the wrong.
The number's a little different. Okay.
So it is the same thing that Peace Health reported. It's $516,838.42.
Thank you for updating my number.
I sent you a text too, just in case you.
Can you read it one more time, Pam?
I will go ahead and read the motion one more time. I move to disperse our semi-annual payment to Peace Health in accordance with the Peace Health Peace Island Medical Center Subsidy Agreement for $516,838.42, covering July through December 2020. Do I hear a second?
I will second that.
I second.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? If not, I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
It's approved
unanimously. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, commissioners. Have a great evening.
You too.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.